Hello, everyone. Seems like I'm live already. Number five is alive. There was a pretty fabulous show, as usual, Vin. Absolutely love your shows, love your voice, love your message, love the things you know. Hello, especially to my little friend Vibe and all the friends in chat. I have here with me my friend Tim Warner, who's been my friend for a very long time. And we're going to talk about obscure films and obscure friendships. Because Tim and I both have some very strange friends, and I was saying in a show recently how we don't we get all our friends together and they don't always get on. So welcome, Tim. Thank you for coming.
And a greetings to you and a greetings to all the listeners.
Yeah, it's really great to have you. Tim, you had a radio show for some time in Melbourne.
That's right. I had a student radio when I was doing my second stint at university. Yep.
Yeah, and didn't you have a midnight shift also? Oh, your second stint at university, that's right.
That's right. Yes, when I was a bit more elderly than the first time.
Yes,
Yes, it was a midnight shift. It was indeed.
yeah, well, that's what we're doing now. So what were the, you played obscure songs there, didn't you?
Oh yes, the very finest of German indie music, mixed in with a bit of obscure swing music and so on. Yes, it was an eclectic mix at best. Yes.
I never got around to hearing it. I don't know why. I'm not very well. I don't even know where my radio is these days. The whole thing's completely set up to the internet. Tim, we're going to be talking about. I've been watching some of the funny films you sent me, like How to Murder Your Wife.
Absolutely, an understated classic.
And the Russians are coming. The Russians are coming. Anyway, we'll talk about them in a minute. I just think that people don't really appreciate people. We get too classist and we just judge people. We go, oh, they're upper class, or oh, they're middle class, or they're from that clique, or they're from that, this other clique. And so we don't actually get to look at the essence of the other person. And that's sort of something that sort of really. It's pathetic of us. I just think we are really pathetic when we just judge people so quickly. And
Yes,
anyway, yeah, don't we? Yeah. And you're not
it
like that.
you can get rid of it. I try not to be. I've got some friends who sort of when they do get together, as you were saying, they can't really comprehend how I could be possibly be friends with the other people who are present. It just it twists their minds. And yet
It's yeah, go
ultimately,
on.
they're people with as I'm sure you would use this term, they're good hearts. They want good things. They want good things for everyone. And as long as they're like that, I don't particularly have a mind if they think some different political or philosophic point, as long as they're good about it.
Oh, like Protoss. Like, I mean, I really had a lot of trouble wrapping my mind around Protoss, who wears a shirt with an American flag and a dollar sign around his neck.
That's right. Oh, and
Like,
he has the rings which have a dollar sign and so on it. Yeah. Yep.
he's like a living cloud. And doesn't he also have some sort of strange religion?
Well, sort of. I don't know if your listeners are up on a writer called Ayn Rand, a German, sorry, not a German, a Russian American writer. Who invented a philosophy that she referred to as objectivism. She said
What's it
that
called?
objectivism, her view was that capitalism had grown without a philosophy. In other words, it had just happened. And she felt that it was up to her to define what capitalism really was and what the essence of it was in a cultural and philosophic sense. And the people who follow her beliefs are called objectivists.
I didn't even understand that because I was too busy thinking, God, I wish I hadn't had my first proper laugh for the morning and coughed and I was doing other things. What did you say? Yeah, anyway, it doesn't matter. So yeah, there you've got Protoss and Babu, his wife, and you just had your fifth wedding anniversary today, a couple of days ago.
2 days ago, yes, but on the evening of it, for reasons that I don't quite understand, probably just poor diary control, of our six wedding anniversaries, four of them we've double booked with other functions, and this one happened to be a 50th birthday of a friend of mine who you can't really control when they're going to turn up. And we turned up to this place, and I was expecting to know perhaps one or two people, but it turns out that this person had a seriously eclectic mix of friends as I do. And there were a whole series of people who I would have never have guessed would have been there. And we did sort of congregate, but the rest of the room we didn't congregate with because we seemed to feel that we had nothing in common with them, even though we'd known this person for years.
I know. Well, I go to your parties and I go, right, I've got to communicate with this really weird person. And then I do, and then I think they're fantastic, and then I get to see. But, gosh, sometimes I have to dig.
Yes, so sometimes the wall you have to climb can be rather large. some of them through personal idiosyncrasies, and sometimes it's politics, and sometimes it's the way they put barriers up to people. So some people just it's difficult to sort of get over that initial introduction.
Well, that's right, and that, yeah, go on.
Yeah, so it's, but the point was, I've had an odd mix of bits in life. Going back to university the second time certainly introduced me to quite a few different people. The restaurant I had did, so yeah.
Tim, you grew up in a very, very unusual circumstance. Your father happened to get the rights for Asta Television. Isn't that right?
No. Grandfather founded the company.
Oh, your grandfather founded Asta.
Asta, yeah. Right. We were an electronics company. And as a result, we also associated with things like record people and television people and so on. So yeah, always had a contact with a rather eclectic group.
And then your father, then your father ended up owning Channel 9, which is, he then sold to Kerry Packer, and you grew up sort of with this, surrounded by enormous wealth, and you were an afterthought, right? I mean, you were an accident, weren't you? You were born an accident.
Yes, absolutely. My mother insisted on double beds. Sorry, two single beds after my birth. Yes.
And so your father was the Commodore of the Sandringham Yacht Club, and they didn't expect you to come along, right? You were like, they weren't expecting you. So you just had to fit in with the party life of the television owning people. And so I always tell people, yeah, yes or no, sorry.
Well, so you're weaving close to the truth, that's not quite the yacht club involved and various other things. But yes, the biggest thing I would have said that altered the way in which I had a different social group and the way I act and talk is the fact that I did sit round the table at the yacht club, and everybody there, because I was an afterthought, they were all 60. And as a result, I grew up sort of thinking and talking like a person who was 50 years older than myself, because no one had any children. I was the only child sitting at the table, and everybody else was 50 or 60 years of age. And so by the time I got to school, I was already starting to talk and sound like a person who was on the verge of retirement.
That's really funny. But I always say you grew up under the table, because that's what you told me.
Well, that was when we went to Sydney, because in Sydney, the yacht clubs also have pokies, poker machines. Yeah. And so in the clubhouse, they don't allow children in the clubhouse because they have the gambling license. And my parents were used to Melbourne, where children were allowed. So they'd sneak me in, and we'd go there every Christmas for the sailing. And I'd be stuck under the table, and they'd be passing me soft drinks under the table. And I'd sit there for a couple of hours whilst they were there in the evening, and I'd quietly sit under the table having my sugary drinks. And, it was an experience.
It was, and then they used to drive you around in the boot of the car too.
Oh yeah,
And you
that
do.
well, that wasn't so unusual in the old days. If the car was full, you put the child in the boot. It was these days, of
Was
course, it's called child abuse, but in those days, it was perfectly normal.
it like? So why would they? How often were you put in the boot?
Oh, normally that was only when we had the whole crew from the boat and sort of we were trying to go from one place to another. And, I suppose it'd be three or four times a summer I'd end up in the boot. But I didn't mind. The boot was quite spacious.
Well, that's funny because, I have a son with an Aboriginal.
Yes.
My oldest child was a one night stand. 2 days after my period, first time I had sex in 3 years. And anyway, to everybody knows this story. I'm famous for it. People can't believe that I dine out on it. And anyway, but I do. Anyway, he complains that he was driven around in the boot of his father's car.
See, obviously, either it wasn't a luxurious enough boot, or he's just not appreciating that sort of it's a fine way to go.
That's absolutely hilarious. Anyway, so yeah, you've had this really, really, really eclectic life, and you had this really, well, your life wasn't so eclectic. When did your life become more eclectic?
A mixture of university, and then the three or four businesses that I got into after university. They're the real essence of some of the odder people I know. So I had a rock and roll rehearsal studio where bands come to practice. Then I had a bookshop in a place called Daylesford where I met all sorts of strange people.
Including single mothers.
Including single mothers who only 2 days after their cycle have had children. Yes. So that's where we met up. And then the radio station, I would have said, when I went back to university the second time. So I've picked up some odd people from there. And then finally, I suppose a thing called the Adam Smith Club, which is an economics and philosophy discussion group. That's pretty much where I met Prodos.
And that's where you met Anna Blaney, your wife.
Well, I met Anna through Prodos. I didn't meet her through Adam Smith, but yeah.
Oh, you took her to the Adam Smith Club after that.
Correct. Yeah, and she's now the secretary. So yes, she obviously has embraced it wholeheartedly.
Anyway, look, I watched some of those hilarious. Anyway, look, I just to round that up, I just think people, I was just talking about the importance of just knowing all sorts of people because they're really rich, aren't they? Like, what do you get out of your different sorts of friends?
Oh, there are one thing is that you get exposed to films and books and so on that you'd never think of reading or listening to or watching because they've got really, really strange taste. I've got a good friend of mine who I met admittedly originally at university, but then I re-met them through Prodos. And he is one of these guys, no names, no pack drill here for those who are listening from the intellectual property police. He's one of these Pirate Bay sort of people and downloads everything. And he has a real thing for things like Finnish horror films. The most famous one, which some people would know, is the one where it turns out that Santa Claus, in fact, is an evil character who the Finnish managed to suppress about 3 centuries ago, and then someone brings Santa Claus back to life, and he wanders around the landscape slaughtering children. Now, that's an odd little horror film, but that's the sort of thing that he loves downloading.
Oh,
And
God.
so, yeah, I get exposed to some films that I wouldn't, if I went down to the cinema complex, for strange reasons, these things wouldn't be showing.
Well, you got me to watch. I don't watch horror movies, and I haven't since whenever. Like, I don't watch
I
horror
don't
movies.
normally either.
No. But I watched. Your wife is a feminist, right? And she's what she did a doctorate on what was it? Something to do
Oh,
with women's rights.
That's right. The link between the temperance movement of the 19th century and the suffragette movement, the movement to get the votes for women, and they were pretty strongly linked, especially in the Anglo-Saxon countries, because there was a thing called local option, where the temperance people had managed to persuade the governments into allowing for the licenses of pubs to be determined by local votes. So, each town could vote, oh yes, we want a new pub, or we don't want a new pub. And
Sounds like a good
once
idea. Go on.
yes well once the temperance people had managed to get that, they wanted the maximum number of people to vote against pubs. And of course, the wives, who were largely the how should we say, suffering the negative effects of alcohol consumption, were a fairly reliable group of voters against this thing. And so the temperance workers started agitating for female votes, so that then they could vote against the new pubs.
Does that really
And Anna
happen?
and hmm?
Go on.
Yes. Not that your Irish and international people would be up on this, but there's a place in Melbourne, which is where I am, and we're near where Jill is, it still actually does not allow licensed premises except by vote. And there's only about three restaurants in this suburb that
What's
actually
the
have a
suburb?
license. This is
What
Camberwell.
suburb? Oh,
Camberwell.
really? Yeah.
And if a restaurant wants to have a license, it actually has to pay for a vote of the constituents. And if it's not a majority vote, yes, they don't get their license. This is a hangover from what was called local option, which was very big in the United States. It was fairly big in Victoria and a couple of another state, and I can't remember which one. Anyway, but Anna's PhD is all on this subject. Yeah.
Well, that's really fascinating, and people on people's internet radio would be very interested in that, and I'm very interested in that because well, I don't know if I've told you, but I probably told you that I'm really into this American movement called community rights, and you
Yes,
make a
yes. That
munis yeah, and you make a municipal law, which does exactly what Camberwell obviously have a municipal law that does that.
Well, it's actually a state law, but the other municipalities have given up their right under that law over the years, until there's only one left. And it's a very weird right, because the city it refers to doesn't exist anymore, because we had a reorganization of the cities about 20 years ago in Victoria. And Camberwell as a city doesn't exist anymore. There's a much, much bigger municipality which covers the area, which does the garbage and the roads and all the rest of it. But when you want to get the license, you still have to go to the group of people who live in the area that used to be a city but isn't a city anymore, because it's all still in the old act. You've got to go and ask these people to vote on whether you can have a restaurant license.
Wow, that's fantastic. So that is taking it closer to direct democracy.
Oh, yes, it'd be easily in Victoria. That would easily be the nearest thing we have to it, because it's an automatic thing. It's not like you've got to beg the politicians to have a vote. As soon as a restaurateur puts in for a liquor license, it's automatic. There will be a vote, and you must get a positive result out of it, or you don't get your liquor license.
You've been really sick.
I had bronchitis last week. Yes.
Yeah, it was really bad. I remember ringing you up and it was like, oh, hello. You were really bad. Yeah. So anyway, I watched the Hallelujah Trail.
That's it. There were a series of films that I was wanting you and to catch up on, and I only really got some of them to you. But Hallelujah Trail is definitely one of them. It was fairly well known when it came out, because it had a big star. It's got Burt Lancaster and Lee Remick and Donald Pleasence. But
That was the
it's
first time
sort
I've
of
ever, the first and the last time I've ever found Burt Lancaster attractive. Go on. He was a good
Well,
character, that one. Go on.
he was fabulous. And it was
Yes.
actually directed by Sturgis, who is one of the most famous cowboy film directors. And towards the end of his career, he just did this film, which is a total send-up of every stereotype from a film of about the West. Even the
Yes.
narration at the very start of it, where it talks about the Old West, the Pioneer West, the land before it was won, sort of, they're taking all of the old film titles and taking a right shine to it.
It was an absolute hoot. The beginning was so funny, and they were, yeah, it was quite a comedy. But
Oh,
it was,
absolutely.
what was it, made in 56 or 66? So what's the Russians are
60.
coming? 66.
60,
Yeah.
well, I think it was 65 and 66. That's you've mentioned the other one. There was a film company that was started in the late 50s
Yeah.
by two or three entrepreneurs, and they proceeded to put together a pack of very talented people, and they weren't within the studio system. So this is not Warner Brothers or 20th Century Fox or something. This is just an independent bunch who decided to make films. And they called themselves the Mirisch Corporation, and they made about a dozen really serious feature films. I think they made many more than that, but there's a good dozen that were just stupendously good. The one that most people remember out of that bunch is the Pink Panther. That was a Mirisch corporation, but they also did The Russians Are Coming, The Russians Are Coming, The Hallelujah Trail. Not in a comedy genre, Wait Until Dark with Audrey Hepburn, the one where the blind person is being stalked by a nasty person in her apartment. Anyway,
Oh, I don't watch horror movies, so I wouldn't know. I made a vow never to watch a horror movie at the age of 23, so I haven't watched one since.
okay. Well,
I don't like
the
scaring myself. I already scare myself enough just with my personality without having to watch people's horror
Okay,
movies.
well, the Mirisch Corporation did the fantastic series of films, many of them now very underappreciated, and they so it's but yeah, you can go back to them now, courtesy of YouTube and other various things, or go down to your local supermarket these days where they have all the old DVDs,
All right.
and
Yeah, go on.
go yep, and
All I
so
was
yeah.
going to say, finish your sentence and then we'll play this song and give everyone time to go and grab a cup of tea. And you chose
Okay.
this song. Do you want to talk
I
about
did,
the
I did.
song too? So you wind this in and you lead us into the break,
Okay,
please,
in
Tim.
terms of underappreciated items and so on, there's a really, really good album that came out about what, 10 years ago, by a swing guy called Paul Anka, very famous in the 60s, and he went and covered a whole series of grunge and rock music, and it's called Rock Swings, and I believe the one that we're going to go is It's a Sin, and it's a fabulous version.
He also did "We're having I'm having I'm she's having my baby," which I played
Yes.
to Vin, but anyway, we won't do that one. So let's go, Stephen, and listen to this. You know that word sin really annoys me. You have the root of the word sin, Tim. You studied Latin. Is it a Latin word?
It probably is. I can do the 21st century thing here and go sin in my Google.
Well, I have sin in my mind. It means to
Yes.
miss the mark. It means to
Okay.
miss the
What's
mark.
your social
So,
insurance number in Canada?
I beg your pardon? Oh, great. But the word sin means to miss the mark. So it goes like this. If your target is to attain peace of mind or, a happy mind, and you miss the mark because you do something that causes your mind sort of some sort of guilt or anger or jealousy or increases negative thoughts in your mind, then you've missed the mark because the mark was to be happy. So it's
Yes.
not inherent, there's no inherent quality in it. Sorry,
No,
go on.
apparently in Greek and Hebrew, it originated in archery, and it means to miss the target, an error.
And so if somebody sins, they've just missed the, I've thought about this word for years and years and years and years and years. You're all sinners. It's just such a load of bunkum. Like, I'm not going to swear too much, Tim, because you might want this pod and play it to your mother-in-law, who you brought to my house the other day, and she discovered the walnut piano in the garden, was horrified. She's got to bring the, tell her I want the piano renovator to come and take
Yes.
that old walnut piano.
Okay, yes.
But
The
anyway, back to sin.
back to well, the Pet Shop Boys who did the original version of that song. Yes, I'm not quite sure what the whether they would be conforming to the era version, although it fits fairly nicely with the lyrics of the song. But because they of course are their lifestyle, at least by the standards of the 80s, could be described as a sin.
Do you believe in sin, Tim?
I believe in doing wrong. Yes. Sin in the strictly injunctions in the Bible, I'm not so keen on. But I think it is possible to do wrong and to do so knowingly.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, but that's a big difference.
It is a fairly big difference. I'm in that sense, I'm a fairly heterodox Christian. So yes, I don't necessarily take the 10 big rules and say that the way that the church looks at them is the way to go.
Absolutely. Well, anyway, I just think people should never believe in that word sin. I think it's the most stupid, stupid, stupid word. I think what happens is this: we keep this childish attitude towards. We'll get back to the films in a second. We have this really childish attitude towards life, and you know how, like, you have the ego and the super ego, and the super ego is like morality that you learn from society,
Yeah.
and so it's a societally imposed morality. Now,
Yeah.
how do I tie this back to sin? So what happens is, I think the church fits in that way. It's like the superego with a superimposed morality. But if we're integrated as a person, and we integrate our ego and our superego, and we actually, our superego becomes from an internal locus of control, right?
Yes.
Because you've achieved that age of moral reasoning, and you work on your moral reasoning,
Yep.
then you have your own ethics. Right? You have your own ethics.
Well,
So okay, I'll finish. Let
yep.
me finish. So, because that is a debatable point, and I can see some ways you can debate that. So what happens is, the paternalistic approach, you'll understand this, you've got some so brainwashed in, steeped in feminism. So the patriarchal approach, the me, the binary of me and not me, that patriarchal approach is what the church uses to control and oppress the people with. Whereas, in fact, and they call it sin. You can take it from there, Tim.
I can take it from there. And yes, I'm not quite sure I go down the Hegelian stroke Christian well, not even Christian. It's the analysis of Christianity that you've suggested.
Why not? Why not?
Well, the problem I find with that as a standalone analysis is that it assumes that the individual doesn't have to deal with other individuals. It's assuming that this person who's going to incorporate their Freudian three levels of persona then doesn't have to deal with others. The whole point of the super ego, if you're going to use that term, is that it is to do with those around you and what they operate under. If you operate under a totally different system, you're going to have conflict with those around you. So you can say, okay, the choice of ideas and constructions that the Catholic Church and the post, well, actually, well, I won't say the Catholic Church, I'll say the post, post City of God, church, has taken. Yes, it has problems, and you can describe them as negative and not constructive and all sorts of things, but nevertheless, some you had to have a group of things, and a lot of other cultures at different times have had equally negative choices in that regard. But you've got to have some choices about what you're all going to do and believe, or else the society's not going to work.
Yeah, but wait a minute. So long, you cough. So long as they are choices. But where does a choice begin, and end? Where, there's that old debate of, is there such a thing as free choice?
Yes, well, the choices I'm referring to there were made, for instance, at various councils of the church. They were, in fact, debated, whereas in a lot of societies, these things have just happened over time and there wasn't debate. So, in one sense, you can blame the Christian church, more actively than you can a lot of other societies
Hang on a
because.
minute. Are we being Church of England or Roman Catholic here?
No, here are we're well before any breaks. This is even before the Orthodox split from the Catholic Church.
Okay, so they were debated.
This is back at the was it third, fourth, fifth councils of the church. So this is post Nicaea, which is 425, so just after then you had Augustine's City of God. And so a lot of the way the Christian church as a whole, the main one that we know of, devolved a lot of its thought, which yes, feminists would regard as patriarchal, hierarchical, etc., etc. They were actually decided in a discussion. You can actually go back and look at the debates, and some of the debates are downright fascinating about where they could have gone. And where the whole of Europe, especially, but now of course the world, because Christianity has had influence elsewhere. Like the whole concept between the Aryans, and I'm not talking here about sort of blonde, blue-eyed people in Nazi Germany. I'm talking about Aryan and the Arian, and they believed that religion was an experience rather than something to be imposed.
Yes.
And whilst the Protestant ideas go back a little bit towards that, they're nowhere near as close to Eastern philosophy as the Arians were. The Arians were deeply into a personal revelation of Christ, where you went into meditative states and experienced the love of God. And that was actually voted on at church, and they decided to go down the path we have today. But it was an option. It's not like this accidentally happened. They
Yes.
actually
So
had
which
a
option did they choose? Because I haven't been to church since I was 12 or something. Oh, I did go. I've taken the kids to church because I reared them Buddhist, so I thought I'd better take them to Christmas and Easter a few times. Yeah, go on.
Yep. Okay. Well, the what you described as the patriarchal hierarchical church, okay, is what we have today. But there were a series of points where other people had other philosophies of Christ and of religion, and they had long discussions and they had votes. And in the end, the version of Christianity we have today, with
Which is, that's my question.
which according to the feminist
Patriarchal.
way,
Top.
is patriarchal, hierarchical, and negative in its view of personal relationships. That's
Full of shit.
actually, yeah, it's actually a choice. They actually went down this path. In a lot of, as I was saying before, a lot of cultures, these things happened over time incrementally. No one made any absolute decisions. But in Christianity, you can actually point to a given date and say, okay, they had this debate in 425, and in I think 530, I think was another one, and you can actually look at the two sides of the debate and look where they went. And of course, due to the hierarchical, patriarchal nature that they decided to go down, after they had a debate, the debate ended and everybody was meant to conform to the one that was chosen. So they rapidly got into this idea that you had to punish and suppress anybody who was on the losing side of the argument.
Well, that's really interesting. Tim, just type in those dates and some links for me, will you?
Okay.
I mean, don't put yourself too hard to work. I know you're on your iPhone, but just those dates and the Aryans, that's really interesting. And it'd be interesting, or at some stage later anyway, it'd be interesting to know where to find those debates.
Yep.
Because I think,
Okay.
that the church stole a spirituality from the people. And so that's sort of when they did it.
Yep.
Well, they're doing it today. They're continually doing it. Yeah, so now we've that's all over your song, It's a Sin, and we managed to talk about that for 15 minutes. So back to the obscure movies. The
Yep.
Russians are coming, the Russians are coming. That is absolutely hilarious. But I couldn't get the end of it.
Okay, at the as in you couldn't download it or you didn't understand it.
No, I didn't download it. I couldn't download the end. I just took it off YouTube bit by bit. I don't know how to work Pirate Bay. I'll have to have some lessons from your friend.
Okay. Well, in fact, there are some ones which we won't discuss in public, but there are ones that are invitation only to get around the evil film companies and music companies.
Really?
Oh yes. They operate under the radar. Now the okay. So Russians are coming. Russians are coming. The premise is that a Russian sub has been told to go and look at the United States, but that the captain, who is so excited to see the American coastline, proceeds to run his sub up on a sandbank. And he's perfectly well aware that if the Americans find him there, that it could cause World War III because, it'd be the Russians invading America. So he sends ashore six guys in a rowing boat to try and steal a motorboat to drag the submarine off the sandbar and to get out to sea before anybody finds him.
Which is boating people's children, we both know happens all the time.
Time,
Well, with my
yes.
father, it did. We're always pushing the bloody boat off a sandbank. Anyway, go
My
on.
father used to be given a bucket and a spade for his birthday each year because of the number of sandbanks we found.
So that's what we should. Anyway, go on, go back to it. So then.
Okay, so he sends it ashore, and it turns out that it's an island off the shores of Carolina. And along, you don't really see it on the large scale maps that most people look at of the United States, but off the east coast of America, there are actually quite a few small islands that are, 5 or 6 miles off the coast and are only connected to the land by a ferry. And it's one of these little islands that's cut off from the rest of America. And it arrives on a Sunday morning, and you've got these Russians wandering around trying to quietly, with no one noticing, grab a car and then grab the boat. But of course, pretty soon people start waking up to the fact that these guys are wandering around and they think that it's a Russian invasion. So they're running up and down saying, "The Russians are coming, the Russians are coming." But the Russians have cut the telephone lines, so they can't communicate with the mainland. And so you've got this hysteria of the Russians invading. The Russians are desperately trying to not be noticed and to try and just get a motorboat so that they can get the sub and pull it off and everything will be fine. And at the very end, they
Well, hang
manage
on,
to
wait a
get.
minute, wait. I just love the
Okay.
scene. I love the
Yep.
scene where the head of the Russian ship, the captain of the Russian sub. I don't know how
Yep.
he ends up on the dock all of a sudden instead of on the sandbar, but anyway, the sub's at the dock, and he says, "Righto, do what I say or I'll blow you up." And it is a nuclear sub, but he's actually got a cannon there, and he's got this guy, and just the pathos in it, too. Like it shows the nervousness on everybody's side, and so then everybody pulls up their guns. Who's the actor? Who's the sort of the sheriff or whatever he is?
That's Brian Keith.
He was great, wasn't he?
He is.
He was.
He was the guy from Family Affair, if you remember from your 1960s
That's
television
right.
programs.
Oh, he was gorgeous. Oh, he was just gorgeous. Anyway, in this one, he's got that same laconic sort of character, and he's standing there going, "Well, listen, you can sort of shoot your cannon at us, but look, we'll shoot you." And they all pull up their guns, and actually, it seemed like a fantastic argument. A fantastic demonstration as to why people should be allowed to have guns.
Well, it's it it
I loved it.
it has a
Everybody
lot
had a
of, it has a
gun, and
lot
they
of
were
deep,
going.
it has a lot of deep messages, especially the bit which
Yes.
is immediately after that, where the child gets into danger. We won't give too much away about it, but and that everybody rallies around and saves the child because suddenly they realize there's something more important in the world. But it's there are some scenes in it, like the Russians realize that everybody is running around and causing trouble, so they decide to calm everybody down. And there's only one guy amongst the Russians who can speak English. In fact, it's Alan Arkin, and he's trying to get all of his sailors to be able to say this phrase to calm everybody down. So he says, "Right, emergency, emergency, everybody to get from street," and he's trying to get his sailors. All sail say this so they can go down the street and it'll be like, just calm down, everybody go back to their houses. It's a very funny film. It is it's well worth the
It's
time
very
to see.
clever. Yeah, it's a very clever film. I mean, I just thought this is really deep, even though it was a comedy. You
That's
did
right.
have so many. It was thick as you know, if you're doing an anthropological sort of analysis of that film, you'd call it, or what's his name, that famous sort of guy that we used to use to analyze anthropology? Thick. It's called thick. Thick meaning. I think it's thick. Not thick like you're thick, but thick.
Yes, I understand what you're referring to, but I can't think of the person you're referring to.
No, Turner.
Okay.
Turner. He's a famous anthropologist. When you're really looking for someone good to analyze, ways to analyze meaning, Turner, his name is. Anyway, so it is thick. It is thick with meaning.
And the other what do you call it? The other film we were talking about, The Hallelujah Trail, actually is not
That's
quite
thick.
as, but it does have some very interesting things to say about a conflict also, because it takes a lot of the usual stereotypes about the Indians, the miners, the army, and so on, and it subverts them very interestingly. Because there is a battle in the called
A
the
battle in the
Battle
dust storm.
of Foot Rot, no, Foot Rot, no, Whiskey
No,
Flats,
whiskey flats.
and it's in the middle of a
Whiskey
sandstorm when
swamp.
where the army meets the temperance women, meet the miners, meet the Indians, meet the whiskey train, and they're all shooting at one another, but it's the middle of a sandstorm, and they end up all stuck in various positions. But when the sandstorm clears, no one's been hurt. They're all facing one another in every direction,
Right. They're all in
and
circles.
they have this peace conference immediately afterwards, which is a real hoot because it's a real send up of those sort of peace conferences you saw in westerns in the old days.
I know, it was fantastic. And the thing that I really got about it was I was just recently studying existential angst. And different types of anxiety, and there's three types, whereas they only thought there were two. But this new guy, he's sort of quite fallen out with the sort of psychological. He's a psychiatrist with a psychiatric society because he's sort of, a trailblazer, and they believe first there was just existential angst, and there was predatory angst. So there's, the angst that I don't exist, and there's the angst that I will be killed. But now there's predator angst, which the Tibetans talk about, which is the angst of having harmed somebody. Then you
Right.
become fearful of them. And I remember reading this years and years and years ago, and when I was living with taipans in Queensland, and I was having a lot of trouble with them, and they killed two of my dogs, and they were in the house, and taipans, they're bloody. I was writing poems. There's a snake in the house. Did it come for the mouse? Like, it was just there were just snakes everywhere. And I only write poems under extreme stress. Anyway, so I decided, Sandy, my Sandy Russell, my boyfriend, my partner, he wanted to kill it, and I'm going, no, don't kill it, don't kill it. Anyway, eventually he did kill it, one in the kitchen, because I was actually standing on the top of the bed, and it was just lashing and lashing at me. It chased me into the bedroom. And but anyway, we decided, I decided, to ring the snake catcher and work out how to go about it, because I know that when you harm something or someone, then you increase your hatred, your fear,
Jill,
and your hatred towards them. Yes, Stephen.
there's a message in Skype for you.
Oh, okay. I better go to Skype then. Skype? No one's messaged me in Skype. Do you mean in chat?
Yes, no, in Skype chat. I
Oh.
have. I have.
Would that be you, Stephen? Oh, okay. Okay. Okay.
Just go
You
on a bit,
okay?
okay?
Okay. So I'll
All
just
right.
keep on talking for a while. Okay. So we're going to go a little bit over time by the look of it. So anyway, relating to what you're saying, when you start harming people or being mean to them, then it increases your fear of them, and it increases your fear of them. And the interesting thing about this film was when the guy goes, "Nobody was hurt."
Yes.
And then I
Yes, it
immediately thought, ah, nobody was hurt. So there's freedom for reconciliation, because no damage is done to anybody. And not only is no damage done to anybody, but also nobody has the predatory angst that is created by harming others. So peacemaking would be very easy.
Yeah, and in addition to all of these lovely bits, one thing which my beloved wife likes in particular is the fact that the temperance movement was there, but it's not commonly in the normal Western films that you see, and they've gone and shoved it right in the middle of a standard standoff between Indians and cavalry and so on. And it's a feminizing, stroke peaceful, movement, being shoved right in the middle of this masculine, macho standoff.
It's true, and the woman is very feminine, and I like the way she the temper the leader of the temperance movie gets stuck into the whiskey. That's
That's
me.
right.
I
And
like that. And
and
how to get stuck into the whiskey. Yeah, go on.
That's it. So it's a very interesting subversion of the whole Western genre. And as I said, it was done by one of the great Western directors, Sturges, and it stars Burt Lancaster, who was in plenty of real Westerns, as in fact were quite a few of the other character actors. So yeah, it's a really interesting thing. And apart from that, if anybody who's listening what do you call it, a choir enthusiast, it's got some great soundtrack music where they have communal choirs singing various praises to the miners and the temperance people. So yeah, it's all round a great film.
Yeah, I'm going to actually try and get some of that music now, and I think we might end with that one, but we're not ready to end yet. Stephen has to go and do something. So what other film would you have given me? What other films do you suggest apart from Hallelujah Trail, which is that one we were talking about? I at first thought it was true. I thought
No,
the way they told it, I thought, is that factual? And then I very quickly realized it couldn't possibly be factual. It was so stupid.
well, although it's got a lot of historic data thrown in there, like the way in which being a Republican in 1867, which is when it's set, was almost the same as being an American, because immediately after the Civil War, the Democrats were considered to be sort of lower than low, because a lot of them had supported the South. So to be a patriotic a Westerner was to be a Republican. And at the beginning of the film, they're talking about, you know, I'm a God-fearing taxpayer and a Republican.
That's right. It was really clever, though. Yeah, go on.
And then when they're sending off telegrams, the temperance worker has been trying to stop the cavalry, and she sends off all these telegrams to various famous people, the president and the secretary of defense, and ultimately to Horace Greeley, who a lot of people wouldn't know who he is these days, but he was one of the great people for the anti-slavery movement. And the colonel actually stands to attention when told that he's about to be read a telegram from Horace Greeley. And Horace Greeley says, "While I stand fully behind the temperance movement and its fine work, it obviously can't stand in the way of the work of the army." But yeah, it's a lot of really good history in there, even though the incident is fictitious.
Yeah, there was a lot of good history in there. So what's your next one?
Oh, the next one was one we really didn't get to, which was How to Murder Your Wife.
I loved How to Murder Your Wife. That was so clever. That was so the button. I actually put it in the chat on People's Internet Radio. The button, was it called the button debate?
Yes, Terry Thomas and Jack Lemmon and Verna Leese are the main stars of the film, and Jack Lemmon has accidentally at the start of the film married Verna Leese, but when she realizes that he's unhappy with being married, she disappears. But yes, there's all sorts of circumstantial evidence that in fact he's murdered her. And so the police.
He's a cartoonist. He's a cartoonist. So what's his name as a cartoonist?
Brash Brannigan.
Brash Brannigan. And what's he called, the cement mixer?
The Gloppeter Gloppeter Machine.
The Gloppeter Glopp Machine.
Yeah. He's done this cartoon about killing his wife, and they find the cartoon where he put her into the Gloppeter Gloppeter Machine, but the wife has disappeared. So they've got him for murder. And he realizes that his lawyer is an incompetent. So he puts his lawyer on the stand and decides to make a presentation on what life would be like if his wife didn't if his wife had disappeared, as in the lawyer's wife. And in the end, he gets the judge and the jury and everybody else except the women in the court to accept that murdering your wife is a mere act of rationality. It's a perfectly justifiable homicide. So he gets declared innocent, even though he says he's done it, but in fact he hasn't done it.
Yeah, I know. And the butler who's scared of losing his personal relationship with his boss is saying, "Come on, now you've been acquitted of murder. Let's just go and murder her anyway." Because,
right.
You can't be charged for the same crime twice.
Yes, double jeopardy, yeah. Terry Thomas, who's his valet.
That's right.
But playing a very sleazy character, which, of course, Terry Thomas does very, very well.
Well, that's great. Well, look, we've come to the end of the hour. We're going to end by playing the Something or Other, Something or Other, which is one of my favourite things. We're going to play... Tim, it's always been fun. Before we go, I won't ask. I'll ask off air. So Stephen's ready to let go. Timothy Warner, you are a delight. You are one of nature's gentlemen. I've never heard you say a bad thing about anybody. And it's true. I don't know if I've ever bashed you. I've seen you be upset and have tantrums.
Absolutely.
But you are the sweetest, kindest person. Thank you for coming on, and maybe we can do another couple of movies. I really enjoyed watching them and talking about all sorts of things. And can you send me that link to the Ari and Who's He What's He's?
Arians and Gnostics. I've sent them to your Gmail account.
Oh, okay. So I'll put them in chat any second. Okay, Stephen Roberts, we couldn't live without you because Vin hasn't come back to me and help me with my keyboard.
Oh, is that the only reason you have me, huh?
Was not the only reason, Stephen.
Okay.
You're my dear friend from long time, and you're a goodie too.
You're kind of hesitant there. What am I playing?
Well, Well, I was looking at it historically, and I was thinking, I could be doing this on my own. That wouldn't mean I wouldn't still be talking to you.
What song am I playing,
Jill?
I have to
dig at Vin anyway. He's bloody needs one.
What song am I playing?
I don't know. It's the chorus. It's an American chorus from this insane mad film that
that YouTube video.
Yeah. That okay. Tim loves, and I loved it too. And about it's a stupid film, but it does have a lot of meaning. Not as much as the Russians are coming.
Okay,
good night,
we have
everyone.
To mute.
Sweet dreams.
We have to mute.
Cheers.
Cheers, Tim. I'll talk to you in a sec.